How's everybody doing? Oh, good. I was worried that you were going to say you were bad, and I was like, I don't know how to fix that. But so I have a question to start things off. The teacher in me is like, I have to start with questions. I don't really know how else to do it. But I was thinking while writing, I was like, because I got a story, and I was like, has anyone ever been going about your day, and you're just living life, and you're like, everything's normal, everything's fine, and then someone you don't know tracks you down in the college library and asks you very specific questions? Okay, that's what I thought. So, before we get into that, my name is Emmanuel Svetka. I am the youth director here at Grace Church. I work in the tech booth in the back most of the time as well. And since Pastor Steve couldn't be here today, he was like, can you come and speak and continue our series in 1 Peter? So I said yes. And now I have to tell you a story about a guy named Kevin. So we're gonna get started with that. But the context of it is like, I went to college. Okay, fine, sure, no applause, that's fine, whatever. But no, I went to college, not because I wanted to, but because I had to, because I wanted to be a history teacher, and the state of Massachusetts says, well, if you want to be a history teacher, you have to go to college. I went, fine, okay, I'll go. And I did, and I had to take a bunch of classes that I didn't really care about, because when you do, like, undergraduate work in your first couple of years, it just make you take stuff. And so I had to do, like, a bunch of things that, like, were not relevant to being a history teacher. I had to take a class called Chemistry in Everyday Life, because they wanted you to take a science, and I was like, this is literally a 100-level course. That means it's easy. Let's do that one. It was very easy, and it was nice. But then I also had to take a course that was, Introduction to Problem Solving, which was a math course, but like we didn't do any math, and I was like, checkbox, we're good, moving forward very cleanly. And then there was this other class that was called the History and Philosophy of Science, and I had to take it for like a science credit or like a philosophy credit. I don't remember which one it counted as. I think it was actually a philosophy credit. And the class was weird, all right? The professor was like 83 years old, and he was just like always had this chair, like he had a wheelie chair that he would like roll around in, but he was like 83. And we were all like in our like 18, 19 years old watching this old guy roll around the classroom. That was kind of fun. But like, and we were supposed to have a quiz, and he kept telling us, yeah, we're gonna have the quiz next class. And then we never had the quiz. And I was like, I don't wanna be that guy that like, but I studied for this, and I really kind of wanna take it. And then we never did. And I was like, I have to say nothing because everyone will hate me forever, but I really wanna bring it up. And then at the same time, like, because it was a weird, like a philosophy focused class, for whatever reason, none of the students like knew half the stuff he was talking about, and people figured out that I sort of did. And so they would lean into me during the class and like ask me questions, which my ego did not need, because I was like, oh, I can answer all of these questions. This is great. And it just was, it was not healthy. It really wasn't. But I promise you there's a point to this. Okay, we got to get there. One day, the professor wants to have this conversation about truth in a college classroom, and all the kids were like, what on earth is he talking about? But I went to a Christian high school here, and so I was ready because our ninth grade Bible teacher drilled us the definition of truth into my brain that I can still hear her in the back, like echoing in the back of my head today. And it's truth is universal, constant, and objective, and I can just hear Mrs. Baldino's voice screaming when I go to bed sometimes. I'm like, oh my God, I know, I get it, okay. But so I raised my hand because I was like, I got this. And so like, I participate in the class discussion, which was a good time because I was just figuring out how to be a human being in a college classroom, so that was good practice. And then I left and I was going about my day and everything was fine and normal. And I go to the library, which is across campus, so like my class is over here, I had to go like two buildings over, and I just sit down and I'm trying to get homework done because I had like time between classes. And you ever get that sixth sense where you know someone's looking at you and you're like... And so I look up in the library and I see this dude walking towards me and I was like, oh, I know him. Not personally, I'm just good with faces, so I didn't know his name. But I saw him coming, and I was like, well, I know that man wants to talk to me, and I did not want to talk to him, but I could see him like walking straight at me, and I was like, why are you doing this? I just want to study. But he comes right up to me, and he's like, hey, we have the History and Philosophy of Science class together, and I was like, yeah, I know, okay, get along with it. And he's like, I really want to talk to you about your definition of truth, and I was like, I don't want to do it. Why are you talking to me about this? But what I think was crazy about it, and like, my social anxiety is wild because when that man walked up to me, externally I was like, yeah, what do you want? But internally I was like, oh my God, oh my God. Like, I was freaking out. I did not want to talk to him. I really did not want to do it. And so, but he comes up and he just asks so bluntly, and I was like, all right, I know I'm freaking out, but I also know that like, he came up and he asked me, and I know the answer to his question. Like, why would I not talk to this guy? But I also like just didn't want to, because even the idea of being up here, my brain's like, you shouldn't be up here. Why are you talking to a large group of people? This makes no sense. What are you doing with your life? So like, he asked me the question, and I had to get over that moment of, like, freaking out. Because, like, again, I went to a Christian high school. I gave the definition of truth in class. Like, this kid tracked me down across a college campus. I don't know if he just, like, was in the library and saw me. He's like, oh, I can ask him. But I'm pretty sure he just, like, followed me. And I didn't notice until he was right in front of me. And I was like, can you just ask me about anything else? Like, I talk to you about, like, video games. I can talk to you about books, movies, like, Zoroastrianism, maybe. Like, anything. Like, literally anything else. Can we talk about anything else? And he was like, no, I want to talk to you about your definition of truth. And I should have been ready for that. Because my mentor here, Steve Todaro, would always rant again. It's like Mrs. Baldino and Steve Todaro in the back of my brain. He was like, you need to have a 2 to 3 minute, like, version, like, a little testimony for your faith. You got to have that down to 2 or 3 minutes. Because people ask you. And I was like, no, they won't. I was wrong about that one. And that's right out of Scripture, because it's right out of 1 Peter. See, it's relevant, I promised you. It's right out of 1 Peter chapter 3, verses 15. And it says, instead, you must worship Christ as Lord of your life. And if someone asks you about your hope as a believer, always be ready to explain it. So I should have been ready for Kevin. I was not ready for Kevin. But, like, even with that being true, right, I, like, fumbled my answer out of the gate, and I was somehow we made that work. And he was trying to be a Hindu. He was, like, a skinny white dude from Fall River. And he was like, I was like, so, like, what do you believe? He's like, I'm practicing Hindu. And I was like, okay, sure. He walked around with a copy of a Hindu, like, scripture Bible. Like, he was in it, which was kind of fun. And I bring up the story, A, because it's funny. At least I think it's funny. But B, because, like, I was realizing that, sometimes we're like, man, I would be ready for those conversations if I was better trained, or I'd be ready for those conversations if I had a little bit more faith, or I'd be ready for, like, if I just need a little bit more, and I'm ready for that conversation. And I was like, man, I went to a Christian high school. I had, like, a Christian mentor who literally told me you should be ready for these conversations. I was working in youth ministry when this happened. I was doing junior high youth ministry while I was in school at the time. So, like, I had every preparation that you're supposed to have for the conversation, and I still was, like, not ready for it. And that stood out. And it wasn't because I didn't care. It wasn't because I knew the moment he came up to me. In the back of my brain, I was like, oh, this is the thing. This is the moment. I was told about these moments. Right? I wasn't that I didn't care about it. I knew the impact that it could have. It also wasn't because I didn't believe in what I was saying. Like, I believed in it enough to give the definition in a college classroom in front of a large group of people that I didn't know when I was shy and quiet, if you can believe it. And so, like, it wasn't any, like, I had all everything I was supposed to have that would make me ready for that conversation, and I still fumbled out of the gate as I wasn't ready for the vulnerability of, like, that one-on-one in that moment. And why it matters for us today is because Peter, when writing to this group of Christians in the country of what we know as Turkey, but back then it was like a bunch of different places, but Peter's writing to these people, they're going through a really tough time, which I'll touch on a little bit later, and he's trying to encourage them to share their faith anyway, and that's why he even says, like, you got to be ready, because this is going to happen. You're living in a world that isn't Christian, and you are Christian, and people are going to be like, hey, what are you doing? And I was so focused on trying to do the right thing as easily and comfortably as I possibly could that I was not ready to do the right thing the right way. And when Pastor Steve and I were talking about this ahead of time, he was like, yeah, like, we get so caught up in the obstacles to our faith that we're not really prepared for the opportunities because we're so worried about, like, oh, what will I do? It's so difficult. Like, how do I get over this step? Right? I was like, I don't really want to talk to this guy. I would rather just pretend he didn't exist. But I didn't really have that choice. And I just, like, wasn't necessarily ready for that moment. And Peter gets that, and that's part of why he's writing the letter. He's like, yeah, you're not going to be ready for these moments. Like, no one told me Kevin was coming. He just showed up. And because he knows that, like, there's, like, for the Christians at the time, there's, like, numerous obstacles they're facing, some of which are potentially deadly because they're going up against the Roman Empire, and everyone who goes up against the Roman Empire dies. That's what happens if the Romans are like, we're good at one thing, and it's murder. And so they had perfected that craft. And so he's writing to those Christians being like, I get it, you're in Rome, you're facing these obstacles, and, like, you still got to be ready. And then, but he also wants to encourage them in that section. And that's, like, the two things that I'm going to be focused mostly on today. It's talking about, like, what do you need to do in order to, like, have those moments to be prepared? And also, like, what is the encouragement sign of it? Like, how do you actually handle those things? Because, like, Kevins are going to show up and ask you questions. I really hope someone called Kevin eventually asks you a question. So you go, oh, he was right, literally a Kevin. But tough times, like, are forever, and they come all the time. And as a like a regular occurrence. That's what tough times are. Like, you're going to be going about your day and, ooh, a tough time has appeared. Hello. And that wasn't, you're not going to be ready for that either. But I think one of the things that I talk about with my students in my classroom when I teach history is that when you're thinking about people, no matter what's happening in the big picture, people's everyday lives can always be really messy. So if you're living in a country and there's like peacetime, and when we think about that, like globally, like, oh, peace. Peace means everything's good, right? Peace means everything's happy, everyone's having a great time, the economy's booming, so like people are good, right? And if you look at history, it's like, not necessarily, because like if your country is doing like not at war, because this is what peacetime means, if your country's not at war, right, the people within the country can still have struggles. Like, you can be depressed and the economy can be great and you can still be like, man, life sucks kind of because my life is like, you have stuff going on. Or like, your marriage can fall apart during peacetime. Like, just because there's not a war going on doesn't mean that like whatever issue is happening with you in your life, between you and the people in your life, isn't easy. Like, that, there can be struggles there. So the big picture, like, it matters, but for us individually when we're talking about those moments, like, it's not enough. You have to remember, like, oh, there's some people here, and they're going through some things. And Peter knows this, and so he writes, and he says in 1 Peter 2, verse 12, be careful to live properly among your unbelieving neighbors. Then even if they accuse you of doing wrong, they will see your honorable behavior, and they will give honor to God when he judges the world. So to break it all down quickly, he's like, yeah, I get it. Like, you're living in a difficult situation. You have to, like, people are going to notice you. And because people are going to notice you, whether they want them to or not, right? Kevin noticed me, and I did not even know he really existed. And he still picked me out of crowds. Like, I want to talk to that guy. So people will notice you, whether you're ready for it or not. And because of that, you need to be ready to face those moments. And I don't think that's like a call to be paranoid, because some people are like, I got to, like, if you think about preparation, like, you got a guy in a bunker, and he's got, like, rations and all these other things. He's like, I'm ready for the worst. And you're like, man, you're a little crazy. Like, that's not, we don't want to go that far. Like, you don't, like, if you obsess about anything, it's going to take you too far to the other direction. And when someone finally asks, you're going to be, like, too crazy. You don't want to be paranoid about it. You don't want to start seeing problems in places where there actually aren't problems. And you don't want to make an enemy out of a person who's supposed to be a friend. So you got to be slow. You got to be ready, but you don't want to come out with a baseball bat being like, all right, let's go. Who's next? Like, calm down. Right? You don't want to make an enemy out of someone who's supposed to be your friend. And so what we do want to do is recognize that just like when we have passion about things, other people have passion. And there's going to be moments where those passions are going to clash. And that's just the way it is. Like, Kevin is passionate enough about what he was searching for, about his search for truth, that he followed a guy he did not know across a college campus, walked up to him in a library and was like, hey, I want to talk to you. That guy's way braver than I am in that moment, because like, he doesn't know me, I don't know him, and I would have like never talked to him on my own, but he was like, I got to talk to that guy, and he followed me. That's a high level of passion. He cared, probably more than I did, enough to come and talk to me. And I think what matters there is like, we got to be aware of where we are and what we're doing. Like, I wasn't thinking about it, I was just going to college, right? That's all I was thinking about. I just want to go to school, I need to do well, I need to get through it. Like, all those little steps. I wasn't really thinking about anything else. Kevin was thinking about a whole bunch of other stuff. And so I played sports in high school. I played a lot of soccer. I two years of that, I got to play with Pastor Steve, so that's fun. We have a lot of stories about each other. But one of the things we did is we practiced a lot. Like, we got kind of obsessed. We practiced a whole bunch. In the summer before my senior year, we really wanted to get into the state tournament. So we had this great idea. We were like, we're going to practice in July. So after the 4th of July, we go out in like the 80 to 90 degree heat, just like it is today, and we're practicing for 2 hours, and we're doing the whole thing, so that by the time September rolled around, we were like ready to go. We were conditioned, we were like game ready. That was our goal. It was like, we want to be able to just like be game ready before the coaches even show up so we can get even more work done. And what that means is that our passion called us to prepare. We were like, we're so obsessed with this idea of like going to the state tournament, and we did get to go that year, which was cool. But we, like, practiced way more than we really needed to. And even with all of that, we still had games where we came out flat. I'm not going to, like, regale you with stories of soccer, because, like, there's no point there. But, like, we still had games where we started, and we were, like, just not with it. We had that brain fog you get in sports, and it takes, like, the other team scoring a goal for you to wake up and be like, oh, I'm playing a game. There's, like, other people here. And they also want to win very badly. And, like, that moment, though, of recognizing that even if you have the appearance of being ready, you can go to church or you can go to youth group, right? Or you can like read your Bible every day. You have a lot of verses rolling around in your brain. You can know a lot of stuff. You can have all that preparation. But if you're not ready for the people on the other end of the equation, then you're going to be kind of useless. Right? If you forget, like, oh, I'm playing a soccer game. There's 11 other dudes who are ready to just play the game too. And I have to play against them. And if I forget that they're there, they're going to just, like, they're going to win really easily. If you forget about the people on the other end, then all that knowledge really doesn't do, like, preparation didn't matter if we didn't remember we were, like, actively playing a sport. So all the practice in the world doesn't mean anything if you forget about those people. And they've also been practicing for that same moment. Like, it wasn't like they just rolled up out of nowhere and were like, yeah, we're just a rec team and we just showed up here to play. We haven't played before. Like, that, like, they had also been practicing. They also had passions that they cared about. They also wanted to win. We were all trying to get into the state tournament. Witnessing is a lot like that. People out there have their own opinions and beliefs, and they're going to be ready to have those conversations. Kevin was ready, right? He came out the gate swinging. And so if you take, but what's important in those moments is not to look at those things necessarily just as obstacles, and you have to take your eyes off that idea of an obstacle, and you have to focus it instead on just like living the life that Jesus called you to live. And if you don't know what that life is, I would say then take your eyes off the obstacle and start asking God, well, what is that life? Because he will want to tell you and he will tell you and you'll be able to figure that out. But if all you see is the obstacle, you're always going to be like, man, everything's terrible. There's always something in my way. And that's when that paranoia starts to drop in, because all you ever see is the thing in front of you that's blocking your path. And so you need to take your eyes off about it and be like, how do I actually get around the thing? And the only way to do that is to follow Jesus around that. What I think is cool is that Jesus does not pretend that the Christian life is going to be easy. He actively tells his followers that it's going to be hard. And that's what Peter does. He's like, yeah, this is going to be hard. Because he heard Jesus tell him all the time how hard it was going to be. So when Peter's writing to these people in Turkey, he's like, well, he said it was going to be hard. And man, he was not wrong. But Jesus does a couple of things. He's also encouraging about it. He's like, it's going to be tough, but we can get through it. And he says in John, he's having this conversation with his disciples where he's told them, like, I'm not always going to be here. And they're like, what do you mean you're not always going to be here? He's like, I'm not always going to be here. And they're struggling with that. And he tells them, he says, here on earth you will have trials and sorrows. Oh, fun. But take heart because I have overcome the world. So he's like, yeah, it's going to be difficult. But if you take your eyes off the difficulty and remember to follow me through it, then you're going to be able to follow me through it. And I love the phrase take heart, because it's like Jesus saying, like, hey, take a breath. Like, pause for a second. Think about where you are. Think about what you need to do. Focus on going around the obstacle, not just at the fact that there is an obstacle. And the Christians that Peter is writing to, and probably a lot of us, also, I'm tongue-tied, it's a problem, also need to remember to take that breath. Right? They're living in area that we now know as Turkey, in a time where the Romans are persecuting them. The Emperor Nero, if you've ever heard of him, is on the throne of Rome. He's ruling that whole thing. The man's crazy. If you even Google him, it's like, even the stories about him that aren't necessarily real, you're like, oh, he was so weird and crazy that the stories about him are even weirder and crazier. He's not a good guy at all. And even the Romans kind of know, like, that guy, he gets, like, assassinated. I think he's one of those Roman, there's a bunch of Roman emperors who eventually people like dislike them so much that they're like, we gotta get rid of that guy. He's not a good guy. And the people living in that area, if you're like a wife of a Roman, if you're a Christian wife of a Roman like man, that guy owns you legally completely. Women don't have legal rights in Rome. They can't vote. Not that they even have anything to vote about, because it's an empire without a democracy. But like, even when there was a democracy in Rome, the women couldn't vote. And if you were a slave, which just meant you weren't a Roman citizen, you didn't really have much that you could do. People would just order you around, go here, go there, do this, do that, and you're like, well, do I have anything? No, you can't. There's nothing for you to do. So if you're a Christian and you're a slave, you have a huge problem. And then if you're just a regular dude, you got to work a lot. If you're a Roman citizen, they're like, time to go to war, and you're like, do I have to? They're like, yes, you do. You don't get a say. They ship you off. They're going to send you out west, over to Europe, and you're going to fight some weird Europeans for no reason. Your life is completely controlled by that Roman apparatus. And so when Peter is writing to those people, he's like, yeah, you're being Christians in a society where there's a lot of things controlling your life every day, obstacles that you have to face. What's crazy is that the prescription to that problem is the same as if there wasn't even a problem there. It's like, take that breath. Set your eyes on Jesus. Follow him through the problems. What you are supposed to do as a Christian does not change whether there's a problem in front of you or there's not a problem in front of you. Your behavior is supposed to be the same when it's easy and when it's difficult. You don't get a whole new set of instructions when things are hard. And Peter's letting all these people know that the moment you change in this society, everyone in the world around you is going to react to that because they're going to see that change and respond to it. And they might act in aggressive ways because the moment you become a Christian, you're not necessarily fully a Roman anymore or you're not necessarily fully a slave anymore. You have another thing that you're beholden to, and people are going to notice. And then what you are supposed to do doesn't change. Christians are still supposed to act as Christ, respecting and serving others, loving their enemies, and exhibiting gentleness and self-control. And since at the time, the law and the legal system is not ever going to back the Christian up, not one time, they have to be incredibly aware of how vulnerable they are, and still none of those things change. They still have to be respectful and gentle and helpful. It doesn't matter. Peter doesn't like, well, because you're being oppressed by the Romans, you can just go, like, burn the whole place down. Which is probably what some of them wanted to hear, because that would have been like, oh, we can go do something, right? We can. But that's not what he tells them. Peter says in 1 Peter 2, verse 9, he says, don't repay evil for evil. Remember, they're living in Rome under Nero. Pretty evil dude. Don't retaliate with insults when people insult you. Instead, pay them back with a blessing. That is what God has called you to do. It would not have been fun to live in Rome. Like any freedom that you enjoy now, you would not have had back then, and you would have had to eat a lot of cereal. All right, you don't want to be there in that time period. The expectation doesn't change. No matter how difficult it was for them, Peter's like, you still have to act like Christ act. Don't repay evil for evil. So he's like, you got to be ready for those moments because you're living in that society. And when we live in the society that we live in, regardless of how like difficult it feels, because it can feel like we're living in Rome sometimes, I think for some of us, we're like, man, everything's hard, and people don't necessarily like us all the time. Like there's that list of things that we can talk about. But Peter's like, it doesn't matter how hard it is. The expectation remains the same, and you have to be ready to meet the expectation regardless of the obstacle. Don't repay evil for evil. And on top of that, the next step, when you're like, all right, so I have to be ready to face these problems, the expectation doesn't change. The second step in that is that you have to actually be willing to meet the expectation. Because you can know, yeah, I got to be kind and I don't have to repay evil for evil. But if you're not willing to actually do it, then like it's going to fall apart. You're not actually going to get anywhere. You're not actually going to do anything. You're just going to be like, I'm ready for an obstacle. Actually, no, I'm not. And then you just leave. Like you're not actually doing anything. You've hyped yourself up for something. It'd be like if I practiced soccer all summer and then didn't actually play in any of the games that season. I just ran around for 2 hours a day for 2 months in the hot sun for no reason. Right? I still had to go and play the season. I still had to go play the 12 games. So when Kevin walks up to me in the library, I could have just blown him off. Right? I could have told him, like, just leave me alone, or I don't want to talk to you. Or I could have been like, I just gave him like a dismissive answer. Right? I also could have just gone with my gut and kind of like told him nothing. You know, when someone asks you a question, you give them an answer and you're like, I didn't tell you anything. Right? You just like gave them some nonsense and hoped they would go away. Or I could have just lied and been like, I read that in a book. I heard that somewhere. I don't know. I just wanted to like impress the professor. Like I could have done all sorts of different things to get him to leave me alone. The problem was is that I did technically know the answer to his question. I just had to be willing to give him an answer. And even though I wasn't really ready in the moment, I kind of did my best. And Peter writes in 1 Peter 3, verses 15 and 16, he says, instead, you must worship Christ as Lord of your life, right? And if someone asks you about your hope as a believer, always be ready to explain it, but do this in a gentle and respectful way. Keep your conscience clear. Then if people speak against you, they will be ashamed when they see what a good life you live because you belong to Christ. So Peter is outlining some steps that we should take when somebody asks. He's like, yeah, people are going to ask. You got to be ready for it. And then when they do ask, there are some certain things that you are supposed to do. The expectation is there again. He's like, here's what it's supposed to look like. And I think it's important that he also specifically says, if someone asks you. He doesn't say, like, hey, when you're like at a family gathering, make sure you bring it up to your atheist aunt or something, right? And he doesn't say, like, go door to door and demand people talk to you about your faith. I used to have a good time with the Jehovah's Witnesses in my house when I lived in Dighton, but, like, I don't know if they were having fun. I was having a great time. But, like, he's like, he doesn't say go door to door, and he doesn't say, like, throw Bible pamphlets into large crowds and hope for the best, which they used to do in China in the 1800s, because it was illegal. So they were like, well, if they won't let us speak, we'll throw paper at them. Didn't end well. That's a story for a different time. You can come ask me about it, and then I'll tell you. I won't tell you here. But, like, there's not any of those things. He's not asking them any of those things. He's saying, if somebody asks you, and we're supposed to worship Christ as the Lord of our life, meaning that if our lives are so centered around Jesus that anybody looking at us could tell, and then they might get curious enough to ask you about it. And then if they do ask, you should be ready to explain it. But, like, don't be a Christian telemarketer, please. Like, don't just, like, go up to people and yell in their ear, like, have you heard about your Lord and Savior Jesus Christ? I have something to tell you. And they're just going to hang up. They're like, I don't want to talk to you. Leave me alone. A funny image in my brain. Just a dude in a call center calling. Anyway. We think that because we love something, that other people are also going to love that thing. It's very normal, right? Like, if you've ever met a 5-year-old who has just discovered dinosaurs or space, they will tell you everything they know about dinosaurs and space. And you're like, I don't even remember any of this stuff, but please stop, because you're making me realize that I don't know as much as I used to know, and that's sad. And you're just like, when will this child stop, run out of fact? And they don't. They just go and go and go. And they're like, how much have you been reading? That's all I have time to do. Because they're 5. They don't have to worry about anything except for dinosaurs and space. And if I just started to give you a really long lecture about obscure World War II scientists, which I could, you would also be like, please make it stop. Not really want to, but I won't. People need to hear about Jesus. Like, they need to. That's what Peter's saying. Like, they do need to hear about this. This is something that you should tell them about. But they're only going to listen to you if you give them the space so that they're comfortable enough to approach you about it. And then when that door opens, when they come up to you and it's like, hey, I have this question. I want to talk to you about your definition of truth. You just got to be willing to walk through that door in that moment, because that's the only time you're going to know when it's open. When they open it, like, hey, everybody in here? And you're like, oh, I've been waiting for you. Hi. I had to drive to a hippie coffee shop in Dartmouth to talk to Kevin about truth, and I got lost. And that wasn't a great time. And we ended up meeting a couple of times, and it was okay in the end. But when that door opens, you've got to be ready to walk through it. And you don't want to run through it. Do this in a gentle and respectful way to keep your consciousness clear. That, like, gentle and respectful is so important. And everyone comes to a conversation about Jesus with some sort of baggage, like everybody, because we live in a society that is like Christianity is out in the open. So everyone is going to have an experience of some sort, even if their experience is sort of like, yeah, well, we don't do that, right? We don't believe in that. That means they had enough of an experience to know that they do not believe in it. And sometimes when people ask questions, it can feel like a trap, right? Like, why are they asking me? What are they trying to get me? Are they trying to, like, they're trying to give me a lecture? Do they want to try to make me feel stupid? Like, questions about our faith can feel like traps. Most of the time, not always, most of the time, when people ask you about your faith, they're not trying to disprove your faith. They are just trying to answer their own questions about their own faith. That's what Kevin was trying to do. He didn't even know necessarily that I was Christian. He's like, ooh, that guy got a good definition of truth. I could have been some weird, fancy science man. I could have been a Scientologist. He doesn't know. It wasn't a trap. He just was curious. Right? Genuine curiosity. And they're just trying to find answers. One of my other jobs when I was in college is I worked at a dog daycare for 6 months. And you're like, oh, cute dogs. No, like, I love dogs. But also, if you work with them for like a 4 or 5 hour shift, you're covered in hair and slime and probably poop, and you're like, I don't, and you come home smelling so gross that you immediately like strip off your clothes, you put them in the washer, and you're like, I should burn them. Like, it was a gross job. But one of my coworkers, one of my coworkers had like really bad anxiety, and it was not uncommon for her to have anxiety attacks at work, which sounds terrible. I mean, it is terrible. Like, even watching her go through, it's like, that kind of sucks. Because there's this person who's just trying to do her job and live her life and make money to survive, and her brain is going through enough of a struggle that, like, sometimes if, like, a customer's being a little bit too aggressive or a boss who was a little crazy was being a little bit too crazy, she could, like, she didn't have a moment. And those situations are just terrible. And at some point, because of that, we had talked about, like, I had also suffered from some levels of anxiety. And it was one of those moments where I was ignoring my work to help her through it, because like helping a person just felt more important. And she looked at me and she asked me, she's like, what do you do when you go through an anxiety attack? And I legitimately laughed and went, well, I would pray, because that's the only thing that works for me. But if you're not comfortable with that, I would understand. And she laughed, and the conversation moved on. And she didn't ask me to pray. She didn't ask to explain that to her. And she ended up leaving that job not too long after, so I don't really know what happened with her. But what I do know is that I only answered the question because she asked. I didn't, volunteer. Like, when she was talking about her anxiety, I wasn't like, well, I pray to get through my anxiety. Like, I could have done that. I didn't do that. I waited for her to ask me the question, what do you do? And I told her. And, I don't know if she remembers it the same way I did. Like, maybe if I ran into her and was like, do you remember that time? She'd be like, no, what are you talking about? It stuck out to me, though. And I think the reason why it stuck out to me is, like I don't know what happened to her. I don't really know what happened to Kevin. I only met with him a couple of times, and then he was out of my life. It's been 6 years, I think, maybe seven. But I do know that the only reason I was able to answer was because I had given her the space to be comfortable enough to ask the question. And sometimes when the door opens and we walk through it, there are not immediate results. Most often, there are never immediate results. But we still are supposed to walk through the door anyway because it's the right thing to do. And the book of James, which is in the New Testament towards the end, the author, a guy named James, writes in chapter 4, verse 17, says, remember, it is sin to know what you ought to do and then not to do it. Which is a really tough definition, because the moment I knew, well, I got to talk to Kevin. If I didn't talk to Kevin, that would have been counted as sin. And if I didn't wait respectfully to give that woman an answer about, like, well, I pray when I'm anxious because there's not really much else to do. Like, if I had done it ahead of time, when I knew it was the right thing to do to wait, that would have been a sin too. Obedience to God is not ever about results, which is a really frustrating thing about it sometimes, because we love results. I think we're like, we're just human beings, are results-based. We like if you build something, you can see the end result of what you build. If you write a paper, get a good grade, you're like, I got a good grade. We like the reward principle of doing something and getting something back. God doesn't work that way. And if you're obedient to God and you walk through those doors, you might not ever get the result. You might not ever see it. Kevin could be a Christian now. I don't know. I'll probably never know unless I track him down, Facebook stalk him, and try to find out. Obedience is about trusting God's direction. It's not about the results. And if you don't walk through the door because you're not willing to walk through the door, you're not ever going to see the crazy cool stuff that God does. I remember those things because I walked through that door, and those were really super weird. I was like 19, 20. I'd only been out of school, like high school, for 2 years, and that stuff was happening, and I was like, this is crazy. And it's crazy enough that I remember it, because God was doing, like, he taught me things through that. Who knows what he did with their lives through that. But if I hadn't done it, I wouldn't have the story. It would just been like I probably wouldn't even remember it. I'd be like, oh, there's one time I met some random dude at college, and I told him to, like, go away, and then I never talked to him again. Like, it wouldn't even be worth mentioning. The final part, you got to be willing and ready to go, right? The final part is that you need to be consistent. When we're sharing our faith, when we want to have that impact, if we care about that interaction with people in our lives, you got to be consistent about who you are. People will not care what you have to say if you are not consistently living it out. Nobody likes a hypocrite. And Jesus said in Matthew chapter 7, verses 3 through 4, he says, and why worry about a speck in your friend's eye when you have a log in your own? How can you think of saying to your friend, let me help you get rid of that speck in your eye when you can't see past the log in your own eye? If you tell people, like, well, you shouldn't say words like that. But then, like, you are just as aggressively saying some things. Like, it doesn't even matter if it's not even a bad word. If you're just, like, aggressive about stuff and you just, like, get really hyped up and angry, what people are going to know is, like, is it about the word or the emotion? Like, am I allowed to be angry or not? Or can I say these, can I just say words to say that I'm, like, what is the actual moving target here? People are going to get confused. If you say, hey, God wants me to be kind to everyone, but they see you not being kind to everybody, they're going to see that inconsistency and go, well, do you not care? If you don't care, I don't have to care. And if you say, God changed my life, but then you don't actually ever change, people will see that, because they'll constantly hear you go, yeah, I changed, things are different, I'm going through this thing, things are happening, but, and you keep saying it, and then people look at you and you're like, you're literally the same person you were 6 months ago. People notice. We notice that stuff about everybody else, and everybody else notices it about us, right? When you're looking at people, they're like, oh, I see everything about you, and they're looking right back at me and like, yeah, me too, buddy. Like, it goes both ways. People pay attention. That's how people work. We are consistently assessing all situations for honesty because we want to know if the people are safe or not. And if you're not a safe person, no one will ever want to talk to you about their faith, ever. They'll actively avoid it. And the only way to make them curious enough to ask is to live that out so that they can feel safe, so that they can feel comfortable, so that they can see the consistency and go, oh, yeah, I get it. They're serious about that. If I don't give a biblically driven definition of truth, Kevin's never going to track me down. And if I wasn't gentle with my coworker about her anxiety, she never would have had that moment where we just got to briefly talk about like the power of prayer. Consistency comes when you decide that you've had enough. Peter puts it this way in chapter 4, verse 3. He says, you have had enough of the godless things people enjoy. It's when you decide, and that consistency comes when you start to push back against the bad habits and you push back against the intrusive thoughts and the fear of failure, and you decide to take deliberate steps towards God instead. It says in James chapter 4, verse 8, come close to God, and he, meaning God, will come close to you. Small deliberate steps, moving in the right direction. And if you're close to God, then anyone who is around you will by default also be in proximity to God, because that's where you are. And when they come into your life, they're going to also be like, what is, they're going to notice. They're going to notice that there's somebody else in the room. It's like when you introduce a new friend to an old friend, you have like your friends groups collide, you're like, why am I doing this? I don't want you people to be here. But you somehow, you're forced to just like bring these groups of people together. And then you like forget to introduce them to somebody because you just go throughout your day and they're like, who is that guy? Like, oh, I didn't remember to introduce you. And you have to go through that whole thing. We've all been there at least once, I think. If you're that close to God, God is always going to be in the room with you because you're going to bring him into those situations and people will notice because that's what people do. They notice things. And we should be so used to God's presence in our own life that we forget that he's in the room because it's just normal and natural. And then we also want to make sure we're always still acting that way, even when we are aware of the fact that God might not literally be in the room, right? We're like, no, like, people are always looking. They're always observing. They're always paying attention. Following God consistently is like a risky business. Not because of God, like, himself, but because if you're going to start shaking up the foundations of your life, that's going to literally shake up everything in your life. Peter writes in chapter 4, verse 4, of course, your former friends are surprised when you no longer plunge into the flood of wild and destructive things they do, so they slander you. This is a fancy word for say very terrible things about you. When you go to change, any one of us, if we actually try to enact change in our life, the ripple effect of that change will immediately impact everybody around us. Change is never an individual thing. We like to think about like, oh, if I change, it just affects me. Bogus. The moment you start to change, it ripples out and affects everybody in your life, whoever you run into at any time, the people in your immediate family, the people in your immediate circles. If you change, they will notice and they might not always be happy about it because change is scary. For no other reason besides the fact that change is scary, will they get scared. It's not because they're even angry about the changes you're going through. It's not because they suddenly really just hate your guts, but they're seeing someone that they know be different. And if you've ever seen someone you know start being really different, scary. Even if it's a good thing, you might still be like, I don't know how I feel about that because it's different and it's new. But change is never just a singular event. It never just happens to one person. It ripples out and touches everybody around it all the time. And if you're going to say, hey, I met this Jesus guy, and he changed my life, but you're constantly a force for destruction of some sort in your relationships, people are going to question, like, well, what is Jesus really changing? Like, who is that? Who is Jesus? Is he destructive or what? People are always watching those things. They're always affected by it. And again, it's not because they hate you. It's probably because they're scared. That's remembering that there's a person on the other end of what you're trying to do. People are scared of change. So if you change and become a better person, they might still be scared of that. And if you're asking them to change and be a better person, they're absolutely going to be scared of that, because change is scary to do. Even like in my own life, when God has come to me and been like, all right, we're going to make some changes, I'm like, I don't want to. I would like to stay here, please. And he's like, no, we got to go. And you're like, what if I don't go? Even when I know the change is good, I'm still like, I don't know if I want to. I'm stubborn that way. It's a problem. It's a character flaw. But like, we're working on it. But even then, good, positive change. And my brain's like, no, I don't want to do it. If we know that we have that calling, though, to change, to bring those things into people's lives, and we don't do it, you're just leaving a calling unfulfilled. And if you're ever going through your life being like, why do I have no purpose? It might be that you have a purpose you're ignoring. The call goes out to everybody. Like, I had my run-in with Kevin before I ever spoke on a stage in front of people. I was 19 years old. I had never done that really before. I was a youth leader, but I wasn't like a speaking youth leader. I was just there to help out and hang out with kids and make sure they didn't kill each other. Like, that was my only job. There are always going to be opportunities to share the love of Christ with the people in your lives. And what matters is that you're in fact sharing it in a gentle and respectful way, and you're not just clubbing people over the head with it. If y'all could bow your heads and close your eyes as we bring this thing to a close. If you're a Christian in the room, I want to encourage you to take that deep breath and ask God what your next step is supposed to be. And that's going to be different for everyone, but if you're standing still and you've been hesitant to engage, I want you to know that God is calling you out of the fear and into a place of action, and that if you are consistently ready and willing, God will use you in ways that you could never have guessed. And beyond all of that, examine how you see the world around you. Do you see it as a place full of enemies, hiding around dark corners? Do you see it only as a hostile environment, or do you see it as an opportunity to show the transformative power of Jesus in people's lives? People around you might not believe in God, and maybe that's a strange thing to you and you don't understand how that works. But that has always been the case, and it is our job to make people realize that God is real, not by arguing, but by showing the evidence of our lives and living an example of what Jesus will do when we follow through. If you're not a Christian in the room, know that God understands your reservation, that God understands your fear, and that despite all of that, God brought you here today to hear the simple truth that no matter what you've done, if you draw near to God, God will meet you in the middle. Mm-hmm. You don't need to have years of growth happen in a single moment, but you can start the conversation, and you can start the process, and you can talk to God about that right now if you want to. Ask God what's next, and listen for the answer. Heavenly Father, I want to thank you for bringing everybody here today. I want to thank you for the opportunity to speak. I just ask that as we go about our day, that you would help keep us safe, that you would enable us to think about these things and to let them sink deep into our hearts, Lord, that we would consider them and not dismiss them. And I want to pray all these things in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.